CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today on the couch in person, Chris Allen, better known as IQ,
hey, what's good,
on
guys?
The nerdcore scene. How's it going,
good sir? Couch.
How's it going, good sir?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
It's funny because we're talking about this in the pre-show a bit, and I like kind of that the fact this is where we're at, but this is the first time you've been on the show, like in person on the show.
Yes.
I love that this is the case. So for those who have no idea who the hell IQ is, because I'm surprised at this point, but just in case, you never know. You never know. We may have a new audience member, may have a new person.
Yeah, true.
IQ, Chris, has been a good friend since, God, what South By was it? Maybe 2014, 2015?
Something like that.
Something like that.
Nah, it couldn't be 15. It'd have to be 13 or 14.
Right, 13 or 14. One of the two. And he's been a good friend since then. And long story short, he's one of my favorite nerdcore people on the planet.
Oh man, I appreciate that a whole lot.
Well, it is. I mean, because I get lucky now that I get to meet a lot of just nerdcore people and music people that I don't know if it's because I'm spoiled and that's the case, but it's just so. It's fun to be able to interact with everybody else and stuff like that. No reason, and the only reason I look at my phone, people, is not because I'm looking at my phone. I'm looking to make sure how chat's working.
Oh, no, do you think?
For some reason, Restream's not connecting to Facebook chat, and I'm kind of concerned. So I was like, it's okay. Typically, it would reconnect that way, but I guess it just didn't like it today, which is it's fine by me. But recording early, one, because you're in town, two, because we actually have another show to get you to. So let's go over what happened to you yesterday. Because even though we're recording this before Classic Game Fest and you're about to perform live, I kind of want to talk about what happened to you last night. Because you've had a crazy couple of days in that you were at a concert last night.
Yeah.
And you traveled this morning. So what did you go see yesterday?
I went to see G-Dragon.
All right. Now, only because I kind of now understand. And I kind of want to get a little bit more of an understanding. Could you give me the rundown of what the hell, who the hell, what the hell, how the hell. Like let's say, okay. Imagine, if you will, that I have no idea who G-Dragon is. Imagine, if you will, that I didn't know even the slightest bit of what you played for me.
Okay.
How would you pitch G-Dragon to a caveman? I'm kidding. Well, first off, there's this
caveman, and I had to pitch it. I tell you, go back under a rock. Dagnabbit, if you don't know who he is now.
I love the idea I still love the idea of how you'd have to translate after this. So there's this country called South Korea. Let me give you the entire history. No, I'm kidding. Okay. So yeah, go G-Dragon. So.
Okay. So if I had to explain who G-Dragon was to people, I'd say if you knew who Big Bang is as a group,
okay.
G-Dragon is a part of the group Big Bang.
And Big Bang, it just in terms of genre, is?
K-pop.
Okay. And K-pop's this nebulous thing, and I say that as a general thing. When I say nebulous, I mean like it's funny because I usually have to do this when it comes to Japanese music because everyone thinks J-pop means idol groups.
Yeah.
And that's traditionally what people think of as.
Well, I'll put it this way. They were the first big boy band. Like,
okay.
I had to translate to what they were to us.
They were like Backstreet Boys.
They're like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You know, but they've been doing it for like 10 years.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So they had like a world tour, which was their 10 year anniversary tour.
Gotcha.
But they've all been musicians longer than that as well.
Okay.
So, like, they were a bunch of artists that, that had pretty good pull on their own, and they came together to make like the first poppin' Korean super group, you know?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, because that's one thing that is sort of a weird, I don't even know if it's, because we typically have, like, we've had in the past that, like, boy band, I'd say boy bands and sort of multi-group acts in terms of, like, that style has sort of fallen by the wayside as time has gone on here in the States. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, like, I think now what the trend is in pop is being solo, and I think the trend more in, like, hip-hop is in a weird way akin to the boy band, not because it's super groups or anything like that, but it's a lot of like if you think of an NSYNC or Backstreet Boys, whatever, as, you know, if you were to rename that to crew and put, you know, have as opposed to being the like you know, like the lyrical thing, and yeah, replace that with hip hop, that's sort of what, where you know, you have things like No Limit Studios, any of those, like, you know, you have like five people on stage, or like, yeah, or like, you know, like some like is it D12? Yeah, I was about to say D20, but D20 is a dice.
Nah, D12, that's Eminem's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was about to say, that tells you where my brain is. But even then, it's funny because that seems to be the Asian thing. I don't even know if it's not exclusive to that, but you have like your group bands in Korea in terms of that. You have a lot of those in Japan. You have the idol groups where it's like, yeah, like you have like 20 people deep and, you know, coming up on stage to do this crazy choreographed song and dance type stuff.
Yeah.
It's, but anyways, keep going.
Well, I mean, even before them though, man, there were groups that were already kind of coming together.
Right.
But they were the first ones that kind of did it like the boy band ish.
Yeah.
They were.
So then when did this guy, G-Dragon, when did he then split off and to make his own stuff?
Well, I mean, he was already making his own stuff. They all came together.
Oh, you know, okay.
But they
okay
were already, G-Dragon was making stuff way before Big Bang, which is why he was already, why this was like a power move. You know, it was like LeBron going to, no, serious.
I love that that's now a thing we can say. I love that
it was
we're
like LeBron going to Miami power move.
God, that worked out for him, didn't it?
It did.
In a way, it did, in a way. Because they didn't. Who is it that they're in the champ? Were they in the championships in the playoffs this year?
Well, the Heat. No.
Yeah, that's no. Right. That's right. They. Who was because
Cleveland? Cleveland. He went back to Cleveland.
That's right. So and then that's right. Now they're in the. That's right. And they didn't win or something like that. Isn't he leaving Cleveland? I forgot where he's leaving now. It's. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of LeBron.
Hey, it's okay, man.
Go back to G-Drag.
This ain't about. I was about to say this ain't about LeBron. This is about G-Drag.
The LeBron of the Korean pop music.
No, for real, man. Like
that's the tagline.
What people don't realize is, man, seriously, he really is at this point probably the biggest like actual boy group or any, like, he's huge.
Yeah.
So even the people that you look up to from that actually people know who are here, they look at him like man, even to his level. To the level of bigger people, he's still big. So for me, it was a big realization, man. Like, as an artist myself, like, I followed him since he was a kid,
right?
You know, and since I was a kid. So seeing how far he's come, you know, and just seeing his progression, seeing people, like, he had a section at the show where, you know, a lot of his family and friends really sat down and just started talking about him. And, you know, to see that humanistic side of
him. That's kind
of
cool. Usually they don't do that. That's because you weren't, it wasn't like in a bar or anything like that. It was actually at an arena somewhere.
Yeah, it was in like the Heat arena.
That is insane.
See how everything comes back?
I see how full circle. Yeah, come back to Miami. But yeah, that's interesting that they had people like, that actually had a section of them talking like that, because usually they don't do that, those kind of concerts.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, whenever you go to like a Big Bang concert or like a concert by those guys, man, they put on a show. They put on a real show. And you sit and you enjoy the experience, man. And they have choreography where, you know, they bring out their dancers. Big Bang has like one of the best bands in the land. And I mean, them boys is bad. So you get to see them come out and just show out and just, more than anything else, you get to see a group of really good friends come together and have a good time making music. And that's what I've always loved, is that you can tell no matter what happens, like, A, he's good at what he does, and B, he loves music.
Right.
And so getting to see somebody like that, you know, knowing how I feel and knowing what I've been going through and seeing the end result of his journey is just, it was amazing to watch, man. Like, there were parts, like, he sat and started talking to everybody, and I mean, like, the girls were yelling so loud. Like, it was louder than the music at points.
Well, that's what I can imagine, that because of him being that kind of act, like, and I've had the, I think the biggest Japanese act, I think the two big Japanese acts I've had the luck of seeing come to Austin, and for it, you know, for their venues not to quite understand how big they are in their respective scenes, was a couple, I think it was either 2016, it had to be 2016 or 2015, I'm going to say 2016 for sake of argument, was Perfume came to Austin for the first time, and they had like the small venue, and I got to get in for free because I'd kind of done some stuff for the Japan Night people, and that was kind of crazy.
I got to tell you, I'm super jealous of that.
It was interesting. Well, because even then I got to see, I can't remember this Korean producer's name. And I can only remember that he came in like this weird silver costume, and I don't remember his name at all, but he was performing that year, and it was fucking awesome. But the first Japan Night I had gone to, and this is after FLCL was a thing in the States, was The Pillows. And that was probably, those are probably the two quote unquote biggest acts that I've seen from Japan. But it's always fun to see the kind of people that go to those shows. And especially when it's like arena one, especially when it's like that big of a venue, you already know, A, this person's big. If they're playing at like the Miami, like the that kind of thing,
as
or whatever,
a solo act,
as a solo act, exactly.
Had no openers,
really.
Like, it was insane.
To me, it's interesting how almost how far we've come musically in the world. Because let's say if we were to flashback, let's just say even 10 years ago, 2006, not even 20. Let's just say 2006. Not to say that Korean acts weren't big. But they weren't, like, to the point where they could have an arena. Like, you wouldn't think...
Right, not here.
Yeah.
You know, like, 10 years ago, man, people were making fun of me for, like...
Right, that's what I'm saying. You know, yeah, like, that's why. Like, 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. You know, you unless you're, like, in L.A., where there is a certain presence of a population that is used to that kind of music.
Yeah.
Like people like Dragon Ash or bands like Rip Slime have performed in L.A. because, you know... There's a population that knows, oh, yeah, that exists, but they're not going out to, like maybe they go to New York, but, like, we're now in an era, like, do you find this insane? That we're now in an era where an idol metal band, you know, basically two kids and an amazing drummer, amazing guitarist, mm-hmm. maybe amazing bassist, can sell at a show in, like, New York.
Like, I think it's amazing.
Like, we're in a weird era now, and this is what's insane, if you think of it. I don't know how you feel about this, but we're in an era now where a 3D avatar that's programmed to sing
sells out
arenas,
soccer stadiums. Yo, that's great, dude.
But yeah, but you know, going back 10 years ago, again, it's just the idea of, like, you know, if he had, you know, he was still big in his respective home country, and uh-huh. it's not like his talent wasn't any less. If not, it's gained more, which is awesome.
Yeah,
but it's so cool. It's funny. Chris is now seeing himself on camera, seeing the laptop on his lap. And
hold on, yeah, let me put it to the side.
It's okay. It's all good. It's all good.
Hey, Apple ain't paying me for that.
Look, we're a Mac household here. It's totally fine. Actually, we're a Mac household. But it's, to me, that's the amazing part, I think, of stuff like the internet and things like that. That we've come to an era now where music, it doesn't quite matter where it is from the world. Yeah. If it's good, it's good.
Well, I mean, I'd like to think that it's the internet.
Yeah.
You know, like back in the day, I used to have to real deep into the forums to find anything
yep.
like overseas. And the fact that it's at a push of a button now, it's become something that's more affordable. Like, even down to the trends in their music in Korea, man. Like, if you really do look at the American industry in general, our music industry is very influenced by their trends.
Yep.
Like, and so is Japan.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting because, you know, if we think of pop music, and this is not anything bad or negative to it, it's just the nature of the business. It's, at times, it's very, very highly manufactured. And that's not a bad thing sometimes. I think there's some artists that came out of, like, the pop thing that are very talented. Like, I would never say Madonna's not talented. I would never say somebody like, you know, because even, you know, I wouldn't say anyone like, what's her name? The one that does all the weird dresses and stuff like that. Sort of the new Madonna.
Lady Gaga?
Lady Gaga. Like, I would never say Lady Gaga is not talented. I mean, again, they're not my style of music to a certain degree, but they're very highly talented.
Yeah, because they're amazing at what they do.
Right.
You know, and I think that's the beautiful thing by seeing some of this stuff is people who are amazing people doing what they do.
Well, because if we'd gone 10 years ago, and this is what's such an, you know, top of the internet, if we, you know, flashback to 2006, I say 2006 is, you know, 2007 actually, not even like 10, 11 years ago, someone like Psy would probably have never gotten any traction stateside. Not in a bad way, not because Psy is not talented, not because Gangnam Style isn't talented. I love how you're looking behind me at something.
Oh, I just saw something signed. And I was like, "Who's that?" And
it was Rand. Yeah, there's a lot of artifacts behind me in my. That's the artifact collection. We'll talk more about that later. But like, if it wasn't for something like YouTube, like I don't. Psy would have still been big in Korea. That's not to say he would not have been big in Korea.
Yeah, because he definitely was.
Right. Or is, really. He wouldn't be big worldwide, I don't think. Or at least not in the States.
Yeah.
Like, it's because it was insane of how quickly Gangnam Style became this, not just overnight success in Korea.
Yeah.
But this overnight success in the world to the point where that it became the joke, which is fine, because if it's a joke and it's like a joke on like late night television, that means it's part of the zeitgeist, and that means it's part of like everyday speak, to the point where people are like, "Oh, I can't fucking stand Gangnam Style," but it's because they're playing it on radios. And it's the idea to me that was insane when that happened, because I was like watching an internet like an underground internet show, and they were playing it, and then it became this thing. I was like, "How the fuck does it become a thing?" I understand why now, thinking back on it, going, "Yeah. Of course it became a thing because the internet spreads this information." But if we gone back to 2006, 2007, like you would have to have dug, you would have to be like, "Yo, man, have you heard this guy named Psy before?" Who? You know.
See, I knew who he was though.
Right. But I'm saying like that's the thing is that was the case. Not because it was worse then. No, it was because it was harder to find, and it's amazing now.
Yeah, and even if you did see it, you had to be able to track it down somewhere.
Right, you had to know. Like I didn't get introduced, and the only reason I bring this up is that one of the bands you and I both liked back in the day, you know, either now or then, was this band named Dragon Ash.
Yes.
It's a Japanese hip-hop
yes.
band.
Yes.
I know we've mentioned before, because you were like the first person I'd ever met that actually knew who the fuck they were. I didn't hear about them. Until, and I got lucky, and this is how, you know, back in the year 2000, maybe 1999, you know, before, you know, that era, to kind of give an idea for the younger generation who don't understand this, I didn't know about Dragon Ash until I had a Japanese exchange student friend who had this CD, and it played it. And this is like punk kind of sounding band and almost kind of hip hop stuff. I was like, "Who the hell is this? This is Dragon Ash." I go, "Can I rip this? Because I need to write this down." And so I ended up digitizing whatever. He gave me a copy. And that was my first introduction. It wasn't even me finding a forum, whatever, because I had, you know, I was into punk. But like for me, Japanese music at that time was just simply whatever they played in the anime. You know, whatever the theme song was for Ranma and whatnot. And all these things are from the 80s and maybe early 90s at the most. So the music isn't like of now. It is like, oh, it's this 80s kind of sounding thing.
Yeah.
And you know, that stuff. But it was weird, like, being introduced to it that way of just luck. How did you end up getting into, like, even G-Dragon? Like, what got you into creative music? I've always been wondering this. Like, how did you get into half this stuff? Because you're like way more connected than I am.
Oh man, so I come from Brooklyn.
Okay.
Right? And there used to be a show that would come on TV, like in the later channels, you know.
Yeah.
Not the standard channels. And they would have this competition. And the competition was like a it was kind of like a bunch of the groups got together and the people would vote for the winner, and the most popular act that night, you know, would win this competition. And so I was flicking through the channels one day and I just saw these dudes like dancing like James Brown, right? And is a dude by the name of JYP. And the name of the song that I first saw, like, and was a song called Honey, right?
Right.
And so I saw this dude performing this, and I mean, I had heard stuff like here and there in the past, but this was the first time I actually stopped and paid attention. I was like, yo, this dude is not only really good at dancing, like, this beat is like, this song is amazing. So I watched the whole competition afterwards. And so every time they would do it, I would always find myself flicking on the channel. And so I started writing down a lot of the Korean characters to try to find the music. And
so you're actually transcribing. I always forget what the language is called, but you're basically transcribing the Korean. Like, you're not like writing English down. You're writing like circles and wow.
So I literally would write it down, and I had a homie, my friend Howie, and Howie was Korean. So I went over to Howie's like, yo, Howie, man, I've been trying to find this stuff. Can you help me out? And Howie was like, yeah. So he started putting me on to places that I could find the music. And
oh,
then,
my God.
Like, I also...
See, I had like a almost like a Sherpa of like... I have the runes. Howie, yeah, please, Howie, almighty Howie, help me translate the words of the gods.
And then I would go online, like a little before that, I was also into, like, way before I was into Korean, I was into Japanese music.
Right.
So I already saw places online
to where you could find this stuff.
Right, because I was always looking for Japanese music. And so I went into the forums and started trying to find more of the artists there. And so back then, like, there were only certain places that you could go.
Yeah.
And they were all on AOL.
Yeah.
So you had to dial up, and I'd be on my computer all night, like, while my mom was asleep. And so they started having these places out of New York called Little Korea.
Right.
So Howie took me to Little Korea, where I could start to find some of these CDs, because I couldn't afford any of them. Like when they used to have them on eBay and Amazon back in the day, they were super expensive to import music. So when I started to find places, I would just buy samplers, like, or I would see something, if I liked the art, I'd buy it. Or Howie would have some of the music, and if I liked it, I get it.
That's so interesting that was your interpretation. By the way, we already have people in the chat room saying, my man IQ, the great philosopher, Arctic Veal, one of our regulars, ironic enough, one of the guys that was like really excited by you. We've already started early, and I apologize for anyone that's coming in at the scheduled time of 7 p.m. I apologize for that. But hey, that's why there's VOD on Twitch, so you get to watch it afterwards. But going back to the whole Korean thing, I love that was your introduction, was that you flipped on the television, saw this there, and then went through a friend to kind of get all this stuff. And that you're free. Because a lot of the times, having a friend be your introduction to a music genre, I think, helps a ton. Because, like especially when it comes to another country, and if you just think of, like, the American audience as a music, you know, the American music scene, if you're saying, what's American music? That's a big nebulous question mark. Because, like, well, what era? Well, what genre? Well, what region of the country? Because you could even say something like, you could take something like hip-hop, right?
Yeah.
And you could say, well, here's what 80s California hip-hop was versus 80s New York versus 80s Florida, you know, all these different,
like,
scenes.
West Coast.
Right, West Coast, East Coast. All, you know, that's, you know, the idea of, like, what does that mean and what does that entail? And what, you know, not even like, I come from Brooklyn. It's like, well, what...
But see,
yeah.
So here was the thing. Here was one of the reasons that I loved it so much.
Right.
Is I could hear the influence of some of my favorite artists.
Yeah.
In their music. So like there was a producer, which brings you know
full circle
back to G Dragon, for example. He used to do stuff with a producer by the name of Perry, right? And I friggin' loved Perry. Perry had that West Coast vibe, and it was good hip hop. But then there was like a group called Drunken Tiger, and Drunken Tiger, they actually used to come to New York, so they had more of that like that Brooklyn Queens flavor to kind of, you know, what they did. So for me, I started just researching and watching the show, and then there was I think my first super favorite group was a group by the name of Turbo. No, serious. Translated, it's Turbo.
Right.
And I still have some of my Turbo CDs to this day.
It's so funny, like going back on that stuff, and especially, and the only reason I even bring up the idea of it, you know, Korean music, is I'm fascinated by music trends and sort of music markets, and I have this when it comes to J-pop as sort of an equivalent way of saying it. Because I have friends of mine that's like, what's J-pop like? Or let's listen to J-pop. Well, we had this conversation back in college, and we concluded that Japanese pop, at least the pop we heard, was very similar to Mexican pop, mm-hmm. in that it just seemed to be from a different era in time. And that's not because it's bad or good. It just felt like it's either, you know, a few years before or a few years after. It was somehow oddly out of sync with what we perceived as the popular music of the time. Didn't mean it was our music of choice, but that was the popular music of the era. And it's interesting looking on Korean music now, because it's like weirdly part of this like R&B hip-hop thing, but not like, you know, if we were to say what's the, like, if we were to talk about like what's popular now in terms of like right now, I think they put a report out that rap music is now officially overtaken rock, as in like the popular music of America. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about rap music, again, it's this nebulous thing. It, you know, we typically mean more of the, I don't know, what would we call modern rap? Like, what would we classify that? If old school, you know, is typically lyric and beat-driven hip-hop and nerdcore is kind of that, what would you call, like, newer rap music? Would you call it newer rap music? Like,
trap?
Trap, I guess. Maybe. Okay. I'm just trying to think of, you know, quantifying in some way.
Well, that's the thing. I guess the popular form of rap right now is like that trap music.
Yeah.
So,
but when you look at Korea, and the only reason I bring it up, and it's just because it's interesting, like the popular form there is like almost like old school R&B.
I could kind of see it,
you know.
But like since back in the day, though, like they started merging, like, you know, rapping and.
Right,
and pop music, and they're kind of R&B ish music.
Right, that's all. And the only reason I say it like that, it in a, I'll put it this way. It's always hard for me as a fan of Japanese music to pitch Japanese music, because everybody has the perception of it being either idol stuff, mm-hmm. or what they heard on the anime theme.
See. Here's the thing.
Which I love it. I love that stuff. But, you know.
No, but that's great, though. I mean, think about the fact that nowadays that's a problem to have, you know, for all of us that was trying to find these soundtracks and all this music. And now it's like it's everywhere.
That's true.
I was talking to my friend and I was telling her, like, man, you know, when I was younger, like, you see this stuff, right? And it's so cool, and so many people are here. I was like, yo, it boggles my mind to even see other black people at this. You know, like, let alone how many.
I will give you that. It is, by the way, Art Mule in chat room is asking, how is grunge in America? I don't know. Grunge is kind of weird in that it was here, and it's still here, but it's not here.
Because it's more underground now.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. I think what happens with music, and I'm with you too in terms of anime music and finding all stuff. It's become very easier to find it. I'm with you there, and I'm happy too. It's always interesting for me just because music's become now this, you know, in some ways it's always still been the same thing, but it's interesting to see now how having the internet become the idea of like your de facto thing. It's like, oh, is it on Spotify? Oh, is it on Apple Music? Can I watch something on YouTube? You know, like that's your typical things of like when you're searching for something new, or when someone says, hey, have you heard X? And you go, no, let me look on YouTube, and you pop it in there, like, yeah. Oh, there it is. It's awesome now because we live in this global concept of the world, at least our generation does, that there, you know, that we're now at a point now, like you said, like anime, you can find that music. Because there was a good point in time where, like, I remember when it came to getting video game soundtracks, like, it would be typically for me, it would be going to a very specific store. And it was never going to, like, you know, FYE or any of these, like, CD stores you remember back in the day. It was
some little joint in the side.
It was this very, very, like, it was target specific for that audience. Like, you went in there and they had the weird anime and they had the soundtrack. And it was never the real sound. Like, have you ever noticed that about, like, do you remember back in the day, like, have you ever looked at some behind, like, some of the anime CDs you bought, like, in the early days and looked? And did you ever notice that half those were pirated?
Yeah, they look sketchy. But well, you didn't know.
No, you
were
didn't
just
know.
Trying to get
but
it.
You look back. If you look back on it now, and you flip the reverse, and you see this like very strange, like Hotmail address or whatever the hell, and you didn't think about it as a kid. I've like looked back on some of those and like looked at the emails, and they're all like free services of that era.
Yeah, dude. Even the anime we used to watch back in the day was all pirated.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, like. You'd have people recording it in Japan, and we'd be over here waiting for it to get here.
Well, because there was like it was so funny. It like during the era, it's funny now how everything is shifted. Mm-hmm. Let's see, people are talking about. Do you ever think the music industry has just become driven by money rather than passion? Maybe we'll talk about that in a second because that actually is a really good topic to talk about when it comes to music and everything else. Kind of sync back to you, especially because you've got some new stuff coming out.
Hey, can you move it over so we can see when they
yeah,
talk?
Yeah. I can increase it a bit. I can see it and read from here, but you might not be able to.
Yeah, but there might be something above it that we don't see.
No, this is it. This is the chat right here. This is the chat right there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's everything, my friend. Bam. There is nothing left. That is, sorry, now I made it. So, yeah. But going back to the music thing, only because it's interesting. Actually, going back to the thing, that one, it's crazy now, and I think about this when it comes to anime a lot, that like how useful are fan subs anymore? And if you think about the idea of Crunchyroll, and the idea where they now, as part of their service, have certain animes that are simultaneously subbed. Meaning the minute it's done broadcasting Japan, it's put out subtitles stateside. Like, do you realize that's where we're at now with anime?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't mean to direct with the conversation, but I do want to get to the interview's question
and
there.
And they're done really well.
But it's
like
insane.
They're translated
it's
well.
Insane, and it boggles my fucking mind that we're in an era now where stuff that we would have to wait of like, oh, that fan sub's out. You only had so many friends that knew about the Raws. And they weren't like Japanese speakers either. They're just like, I just need that anime now. I need to watch that screen, whatever it is. And it would always be these weird – it would never be like your Dragon Ball Zs or your things that everyone knows. It would be these weird ones like, yeah, have you watched this cooking anime? They bake bread. It's like, what? Okay. I'm intrigued just based on that alone. All right. So Arctic Mule in chat room, because this is a good question. Especially when you're talking about music.
Okay.
Do you ever think that maybe the music industry has just become driven by money rather than passion? Maybe larger artists now are just making their music for money rather than because they love the music.
Ooh.
Reason I bring that up is because we start talking about we'd opened up this conversation talking about G-Dragon, talking about Korean music. We looped around all this sort of thing and talking about music and eras. I'm going to say music is that weird thing. It's that weird art form, much like any art form. It's what we call a commercial art form. And what I mean by that is that anybody that tells you that they don't want to get paid for their craft and they don't think about even a little bit about the money, not because they don't want to do the music, is kind of lying.
Nah.
When I say that kind of lying, I mean in the idea of this. I mean, yes, you do your music. Yes, you do your thing. But I guess what I'm trying to say is the idea that you still have to eat. you still have to.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. Yeah. I feel like a lot of artists go through stages. You know, like so for a lot of people, when they start, it's not about the money.
Right.
It's about like, oh my God, I'm making music.
Exactly.
Like, oh, well, I have a voice and I can use it to say the things that I've always wanted to say. You know, like, but as you get further along and music becomes something where it's like, it's either music or working 40 hours a week, you start realizing that to continue making your art, you have to start eating with it.
Right. And I think that's the idea, what I mean. When I say commercial art form, I don't mean that it's a product. It's the idea that there is a business side. You know, the idea of licensing, the idea of this. We're talking, like Chris and I were kind of talking in the car, and we're talking about just like how much it costs to ship things, like shirts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And people don't quite think of that because, we as sort of music consumers – we end up just hearing the end product.
Right.
Not necessarily, and I don't even mean that, this is not even talking about the art portion of making the lyrics or making the music. This is talking about things that you don't even really associate with cost, like the concept of, I mean, we've talked about this before, but the concept of mastering, an album is costly, but the idea of making sure it sounds good. And all of that adds up. And again, it's not because you know, I think a lot of artists that have it, it's not that they don't enjoy making music. They do, else they wouldn't be doing it, because there's, far easier ways of making money than trying to sell your music. Not saying that's a bad way, just it's a hard industry. But at the same time, it's like you got to eat. You want to have this idea that there's some sort of upward mobility and some sort of upward traction where it's just not like it's the idea, like you said, it's like, well, I could commit to paying a 40-hour a week job and sort of every so often perform or sing and stuff like that. But then you start getting bigger, and you start getting more traction, you start booking gigs, or you start having people say, "Hey, can you play at our show here?" In like we're talking about this in the car as well, just because it's funny to bring it up. He brings up the question, the idea of just like you being ready at a moment's notice to kind of leave someplace. And, you're here in Austin because you're playing a show, Saturday and Friday in San Antonio. But that flight costed money. It's not like anyone, you're here, to be honest, you're here at my apartment doing a live show with me because you're going to be crashing here for a few days.
It's a beautiful thing.
Right. It's a great thing. But again, it's the idea that Everyone has this idea, and it's funny. I think we still have this romanticized idea of the rock and roll lifestyle.
But see, that's the thing. Everybody has that idea from a much higher position on that totem pole.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Is that there's this? We have this idea of the big stars, but again, it's way higher position,
right. And you don't see all the work that goes into. I had this conversation all the time. Right? It's like most people don't see all the things behind the scenes. Like even with social media right now.
Yeah.
You can sit here and you can watch this and say, oh, wow, well, he's on a show right now and he's doing A, B, and C. Right? Like, man, for people lower down, then it's like, oh, how do I get there and how do I do that?
Right.
But what they don't see is the portion where it's like, yeah, this CD you're buying is directly paying for my food.
Right.
Or paying for my rent.
Right.
Or allowing me to afford to find somebody to mix and or master.
Right. And that's the thing. When I say that money doesn't come, I mean the idea like, no, I just do it purely for you. Not because people don't do it because they want to make an art form.
It's because everybody doesn't.
Right.
And it doesn't, I guess the love doesn't put food in your stomach.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say. That's what I'm ultimately trying to say. And it's not even
if it does, you're one of the lucky ones.
Exactly. You're like really lucky. This is not me putting a slide. But I said, Artem Mule says in the chat room, I feel all artists start off with a passion and love for music, but as they get bigger, they begin to get used to the money and they just make albums to continue with their new lifestyle.
See, what I think happens a lot now these days because of them glamorizing the money in music, right? When they're by numbers aren't as many people doing it like you think they are. You tend to have people now that say, okay, well, you have a kid that hasn't had anything all his life and he aspires to becoming this artist that he sees, on a national level. desk so talking about
I've,
money.
I've told this story before, but I don't know if I've told you in person. I might have told you offhand, but this past South By, I've talked with this with Vincent, and I got to say this before the Nerdcore show. There was this like weird open mic thing, where I guess the studio or recording place or social media company, whatever, I don't even know, basically charged $500 per person to go up on stage, sing two songs, and then have like a vote of crowd who won and got some social media thing. And to me, it was this weird concept of paying money to play someplace. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that that was actually a thing until like even more so later on that that exists elsewhere.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, when I was talking with a lot of, you know, I get the luck of talking to people like you, talking to people like Raheem, talking to people like Kyle, artists that are either established or becoming established or just, you know, honest to God, awesome people. And, you know, having these like very candid talks, which I'm happy that I get those because I love hearing, you know, all these stories of behind it. But to me, it was such a weird concept of it, the idea of paying a certain amount of money to perform on stage in just the hopes that you shortcut things. And it was like a weird concept of that, because like you can't shortcut that. And it wasn't like any of these music was anything new. It was sort of kind of generic sounding, and that's, you know, not to diss any of those people, it just wasn't my thing.
Yeah.
But it was so weird, the idea that here is $500
American.
I guess for some reason it says it has the wrong game on YouTube. I pull on your Twitch. That's weird because it should be
Napster Blue.
They're talking about the show. The shirt I have on. I have a Napster Blue shirt on from Undertale, which ironically, if you have a connection to Undertale, but we'll talk about that later. Back to rewinding it all, it was so strange to see that the idea of like, I will pay just in the hopes that somebody is randomly here at South By that can then get me the upward mobility, and it's just like I don't. Like, I know that's not how the game is played, as they say. You know, I know that's not how it works anymore. But there's this illusion that it's like, if I play here, if I'm in front of the right producer, if they hear me right now, that's when they'll be, you know. And it's like, that's not how it works anymore. Like, it's not about
I mean, it depends on where you're trying to go.
Okay.
You know, like, there have been people that have been lucky, you know, in some circumstances. But I don't think in those pay-to-play, that's just people, you know. For example, now I am not ever condoning because I'm completely against pay to play.
Yeah.
You know, but let's say that you're somebody putting on the show. You know, not every place that you go can you do that without incurring fee, you know, money.
Right.
So I saw that like going to South By a whole lot, man. I've saw a lot of showcases where people are paying to play because if there's a place that is likely to happen, you know, like where somebody will be there that might have something in common with what you're trying to achieve, it might be there.
A showcase is, and I think this is the difference between what was happening there and a showcase. And this is now a quick South by Southwest. People are talking about my shirt in the chat room, which is funny. A showcase at South by Southwest is an entirely different thing than what this was. Showcase is basically you go there. You have, you know, your name is on a website, you're searchable, you're indexable, you're given this little, this wristband that says, congratulations, you're an artist, and you can come up here and perform. You're sanctioned by the people there. This was like during the day at the same location that a showcase would have been at, and because the bar didn't want to have to move things around, it has a South by Southwest branding, even though it's probably not a South by Southwest event. And it was just, again, it was strange for me, not because I didn't understand why it was happening. I understood after the fact why it was happening. It was strange for me because it's like, I know that there are, I mean, like, let's take you, for example, Chris. Uh-huh. You, like, right now as we speak, you have, which I want to congratulate you in person, you've been nominated for, like, something in the Miami scene, right? Like, what was
it? No, Best Hip Hop Act in Orlando.
Right. Well, okay, but there you go. Some, you know, an actual sort of an award of sorts, or at least, you know, you're up there for that kind of thing. It's not like you, for example, went to say, how do I put it? Like, you perform places, and you, like, have you ever done a pay-to-play where you've gone, you've
no.
paid? That's what I'm trying to say.
And I never will.
And this is what I'm trying to ultimately state, is that there's a concept when it comes to art and when it comes to crafts and stuff like that, that you should charge at least something for it if you can. And that doesn't necessarily mean monetary value. That can be the idea of a favor, of a exchange for things, saying, like, I will do you this song if you will do me this, you know, or I will rap over your beat if X, Y, or Z, you know.
Yeah.
There's still some sort of worth to it, because the idea of it, it's like, if you're paying people if you're paying people for the privilege to perform your job, so to speak, there's something weird about
that.
But,
I mean, and here's the thing, you know, selling dreams is a business in itself. And that's not just with music.
Yeah,
you know, like,
that's what Rand was saying. That there's a lot of money in selling dreams, and I was like,
yeah, it's the truth.
Yeah. And it was weird to go, like, that's absolutely crazy. It's absolutely right. Is the idea of this, and I almost want to say it's illusion, because it is. It's not saying that it could not happen. Of course it could, but when you look at the grand scheme of the internet and the world, as we talked about with G-Dragon and all these kind of other music stuff and Psy and all these things, you are probably better off spending that $500 on something entirely different.
Yeah, but the question is what? You know, like,
right.
And for some people, they don't know what that what is.
Okay.
And so one of the things that I always say, man, is to find yourself a mentor or somebody that can help you and guide you in a direction that you need to go. And as much as people complain about this music that a lot of us don't like, right, where were you to point them in the direction
yeah.
that they needed to be? You know, like, so before you turn around and you're
critical, or
you're very critical, like, who are you helping out?
Yeah.
Who are you dropping knowledge to? You know, and a lot of times you have people and they will literally hog that information because it's like, you know what? I worked this hard to get here and nobody gave it to me. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you all of these things that I now know and possess. And, you know, it's so many things. Like, me, myself, I'm still learning. There are still so many things I don't know. Still so many things that I have to unlock, you know, like, and it's a process, but it's also, I was lucky enough from time to time to have somebody to say, hey, yo, by the way, you know, this, that, and this. And it's like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Right.
So just seeing the worth in yourself and your work, like, that's the start, but it's not the end.
No, and that's the thing. That's the idea of why pay to play is such a weird thing for me, in that even if it's in other words, like, you go to a bar and, you know, you say, you know, I'd love to perform at your bar, even if it's the idea that they'll let you pay for free, I'll let you play for free. People are talking about how they will turn a dream of building an 8-bit computer into money. That's a simple one. You just have to make sure that 8-bit computer can play older 8-bit games, and somehow that's a print for money. Oh, wait, no. Nintendo's got that with the classic. And never mind. Kidding. That's a silly joke.
They brought it back.
They brought it. They made a shitload of money. I can't blame them for that. I can't fault Nintendo for that. But going back to the idea of the pay-to-play, only because we're almost out of time. We're almost at the hour mark here, because we got to go into this. We got another show to go to, ironically enough. Mr. IQ's in high demand here in Austin, Texas.
This is my second home in Austin. You don't know.
But it's it's things like that that fascinate me, because I will say this, I am spoiled. I am spoiled in that I have met amazing musicians like yourself. I have met other amazing musicians as well. I've met people that not only care about their craft, but have had the foresight of asking people who are either higher up on the totem pole, as you mentioned, or sort of better than you, asking for advice, what you've done right, what you've done wrong, how can I do this, how can I do that? In other words, you've cared enough to say, how do I get to where you are?
But that's what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, it's subjective, because it isn't always because I'm like, okay, well, I need to do better, as much as it is like I feel sometimes that I am not up to snuff,
but
I want to be.
But that's and I think that's the difference between someone that is at a South by paying $500 versus you. And I think this is where I couldn't understand it, because if for some bizarre reason, even though I have no desire to, I ever wanted to be a nerdcore artist. I have no desire to. That is, I have learned that going up on stage with Ran and doing filming for It Square Sounds was amazing. It was a great experience, and I understand why you guys perform live. That's not for me in terms of music. I'd love to MC something like that. I'd love to sort of become the guy that got the lineup. That'd be kind of fun, and sort of host that, but not. I don't know. This guy will never rap, never hip, never spit rhymes, drop verses, any of those sort of things. I have no flow at all. People are talking about
that. I keep crushing Tony Stark.
It's okay. But we'll talk about that in a second, the whole music thing. And by the way, if you want to catch it, we'll be tweeting out where he's at next after this. But going back to all that, that's why it's weird for me, is the idea that I have so many people that I know have no problem giving out this information for free.
Yeah.
And giving out that data for free. In that, if ever I had a sort of thing that's like, yeah, here's what I did, here's what's wrong with yours, and not being afraid of being critical. People talking about this in chat rooms.
I want to answer that question.
Which is, did you know that you were good at what you did before you started pursuing it? Or did you pursue it in first hopes that you're good at it? If that makes sense. So the idea being, prior to producing music, did you know you were good at producing music?
No. I didn't think I was at all.
And I think that's the case. No one ever thinks that they're good. And I think that's where the idea of having a mentor comes in these things. And that just means a person, I'm going to say mentor, a person that will tell you
the truth
and will not sugarcoat it. In other words, the way I say any creative work, whether you're a writer, whether you're a film artist, whether you're a podcaster, whether you're a movie producer, whatever it is you want to do creatively, find that person. And it may not even be a friend. It may be somebody else that will tell you like it is, because you will make shit no matter what, not because you can't get there, but because your first things are shit. Like, I always tell anyone that starts a podcast, your first four episodes are going to be crap. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. And it's not because you're not going to get there.
Yeah.
But because,
like anything else,
yeah,
it's a process. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I listen to some of my older stuff now, and I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know, but I leave it there because I want to be reminded that it is a process.
Yep.
You know, like, that it took me all of this time to get to a point where I'm comfortable.
Yep.
You know, and back then, that was the point of comfortable for me then. You know, but never wanting to not continuing to get better. So I guess I would say, man, if you want to be in the film industry, dude, start making films. Just know that your films are going to be horrible when you begin.
Yep.
And that is completely okay. But never stop wanting to get better.
Yeah, that's the key when it comes to anything creative.
Never stop learning about it. Never stop going to places to see other movies that are better than yours. Ask yourself what you like about those things and what you don't.
A lot of times we never talk about this in anything in terms of human life, but a lot of humanity is about the idea. A lot of the thing that helps you creatively is getting over the fear of failure. I've been learning a new language. I've been working on Japanese, on learning for a while. And one of the concepts in terms of teaching it is not tracking how well you do, but tracking how many failures you did a day. How many times you screwed up a sentence. And when you're starting out, it's easy. It's easy to make 100 failures of saying the wrong word, you know, pronouncing it incorrectly, that kind of thing. But as you get better and better, it becomes harder and harder to fail. If that makes any sense. But if you track your failures, it's like, okay, cool, that's where I need to get better. Okay, cool, gotta get better. And so a lot of when it comes to the creative process, same in programming, same in all these things, is the idea of iteration. It's the idea of you do it once, shit, did it wrong, you know, didn't do it right, try again. try again. And eventually that's a released product. But having, you know, having the ability of having older work, either writing, either film, whatever, you look back like, man, that script is crap. If you ever want a really fun experiment, and we're going to leave it at this because we're going to have to get
we can come back and do it.
Yeah, we'll come back later on, maybe the week. Maybe we'll do a hidden 8-bit life or something. Maybe I'll do some gaming with you instead, some PC
gaming.
Dude,
that sounds fun.
But one thing I wanted to mention, and this is something that is a good experiment, especially if you want to do the film thing. If you get bored, try to find Rian Johnston's original sort of short film idea for Looper. And then look at that for the short film idea, and then go back and watch Looper the film. And you can see that, like, the differences between the two. And they're
I'll give you one, too. You can go online, man, and look at a lot of your favorite YouTube personalities. Go back to their earlier videos.
Yep.
And watch them through time. A lot of people on YouTube, man, they don't hide the fact that they got better as time went on.
That's how it is. That's sort of I think... That is my thing. When it comes to game development, Rami Ismail, one of my all-time favorite people, Vlambeer, creator of things like Nuclear Throne and Luftrausers, amazing developer, has the concept of just make, try to make, I think, a game a week. And it's going to come out shit. It's going to look like crap. But, I mean, Unity's free. Fuck, we're in a world now where the Unreal Engine's free.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, we're in a golden era of that. Just fucking dev. Doesn't matter.
Or look at that Ghibli released their stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, just make it. Just make it because the quicker you make – because the idea is the quicker you fail, the faster you learn, if that makes any sense. I know that's a weird way of saying it, but I think that's the overarching message. The quicker you fail, the faster you learn. So fail quickly. So fail quickly, fail often.
Yeah, man. And more importantly, it's never about how you started.
Yeah.
It's always about how you finished.
Yep.
So fall, fail.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
it's great.
Yeah. Fail.
But more importantly, every time you fall.
Get up.
You get up.
Yep. Don't
finish.
Give. Yeah. Finish what you started.
Which
human.
Is great.
to take a Ghibli quote for Spirit Away, finish what you started. It's always like the one line out of Spirit Away that stuck with me was with Chihiro, and that was just finish what you started, human. What the bathhouse guy said. Chris, always a damn pleasure to have you on. Let's see if people want to actually now support your music after all this, because you're coming out with some new albums coming up pretty soon. But where can people find all the cool stuff that is
you can find
in the world of IQ?
On social media at music, EYEQ. There we go. The word music, EYEQ. I'm on SoundCloud. I'm on Spotify, which I finally got a lot of things
nice
situated with that. So
perfect.
We'll literally be putting more music on Spotify.
Rock on. Okay, so we got Spotify. We got SoundCloud.
Spotify, SoundCloud. I'm on Twitter.
Bandcamp. Facebook.
Facebook, yeah.
Smoke signals.
Go like all the things. If you want to go out and howl.
And bring it back to the Hidden Free Show.
That's right.
Go out and howl through your wolf. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404. They're the Twitters. If you want to catch previous episodes of the podcast, you go to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links to show notes, previous episodes as mentioned. And of course, after you supported Chris and all his things, you can head over to patreon.com/8bitlife. Help this show become bigger, better, and more awesomer. So that is it for today. See you next time. Talk to another geek, busting completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
Damn.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.